I'm going to talk politics, and it's very difficult to talk after Helen. Can't see her. Oh, Helen and I have our own story, but we'll park that for now. I'm going to talk to you. There are three things that I want us to have a discussion on. The first thing is South Africa's big political picture. That's the first thing. The second thing is the short-term picture, short-term reality of South African politics. And the third thing is rescuing our future. So that's how I've structured my notes. I used to be a speech writer, so I don't have a written speech. I'm allergic to that. Here is a starting point. South African politics, it's noisy and scary. That's a starting point. It's so difficult to form a clear picture of where it is going. It's very, very difficult. And here is the thing about politics. Politics is history. We are living through history and we are making it every day. And we are going somewhere. Whether we like where we are going or we don't, but we are going somewhere. We need to keep that in mind. So what does the bigger picture for South African politics look like as I see it? There are three things. One, we are going through what political scientists call a realignment moment in our politics. And it's huge. A realignment moment is characterized by many things, but one of which is when a dominant political force that is undergirding your political stability exits the stage, that's when you experience a realignment moment. So, just to give you an example, in 1994, the National Party exited. That was a realignment moment. And typically when that happens, there's anxiety in society. There's fear. Some elements may be excited about it. But most of us in that society, when you go through that, you actually don't know what the future holds. That's exactly where we are at South Africa. We don't know what the future holds. So, 1994, the National Party exited. Now, the ANC is exiting. For the past 30 years, the ANC has been undergirding our political stability. The ANC is exiting. Let me be clear. The African National Congress is leaving the center stage of our politics. Now, when someone dies and you bury this person, you must write on the epitaph, right? What killed this person? Two things we are going to write. And I'm a writer, I'll write the stuff. Killed by incompetence and corruption, full stop. That's when everything said and done, the priest has delivered his whatever, killed by incompetence and corruption. And the party went mad in its last days. That's the ANC. So that's the story. The second point is this. We are now, for the next 15 years or so, 20 years, going to live in an open political field. Got to keep that in mind. The political field will remain open for a minimum of 15 years. What does that mean? It means that there will be no dominant party. There is no single party that is going to dominate South African politics for the next 15 years or so. 2029, no single party will cross the 51% mark. I'm sure Helen would like to, but I know they won't. The ANC in 2029, most probably it will cross the 30% mark going down. Why and how does the ANC cross the 30% mark going down? If you think I'm smoking dacha, it's legal, but by the way, just look at what the ANC has lost from 57 to what? To 40%. If the ANC were to lose that, where does it sit? It's not impossible for the ANC. It will cross the 50% mark, provided Jacob Zuma is still alive and he can stand behind a microphone and a camera and address a few MK rallies. The MK party will grow. But don't worry about the MK party. I'm not worried about it. Why? The minute Jacob Zuma drops dead, that's the end of that thing called MK party. He is the only glue that holds the thing together. And he's not very young. So it's not a sustainable project. But when history is written, it will be recorded that he actually hit the last coffin into the ANC. So the third point on the bigger picture is that we must get used to the idea and the reality of living in a country governed by coalition politics. Full stop. And by the way, the Europeans are used to what I'm talking about. As the Germans, they'll tell you. So that's the big picture. Now let me talk about the short term. What happens in the short term? And I said the big picture is 15 years, 20 years. But what happens in the short term? The short term is, one, we are going to live under a government or governments without a coherent sense of direction. The GNU is such a government. The GNU is a government of enemies. Let's be clear about it. The DA is in that government not to strengthen the ANC. In fact, it is in that government to weaken the ANC. The DA wants to be in government one day. Same applies to the ANC, by the way. They are in there every day. They are working to weaken the DA. So what are we going to get? We are going to get, and this leads me to the second point about the short term. We must get used to the idea of living with political players who are in the same government grandstanding every day. The DA wanting to score points. After Helen has spoken, we must also shift the camera to Figile Mbalula, also wanting to score points. That's the short term. And there will be a lot of bargaining. I mean, Helen doesn't want to tell us what's going to happen tomorrow with regard to the budget. Passing budgets will always be a tough thing. It's not going to be easy anymore. And by the way, I'm a fan of that. I've been on record, the GNU, when it was formed, I said, this is the best thing under the circumstances. That's what I said. And I repeat it. And I don't want it to fall apart, but it will fall apart in 2028. Can get to that. Yes, it will fall apart in 2028. Mark my words. Cyril gets removed. December 2027, there's a national conference. The DA and those who support Cyril will no longer have a horse to ride. The new leadership of the ANC that's going to come, by the way, after 2027, it will rise on an anti-Cyril and anti-GNU ticket. That's what's going to happen. Mark my words, after the local government elections next year, you will see the factions in the ANC. And by the way, it is now culture in the ANC that when a leader of the ANC serves his second term as president of South Africa, what do? You remove him. They have removed Mbeki. They have removed Zuma. By the way, Cyril is the weakest president of the ANC after 1994. He will be removed. Then my third point. Our short-term space is going to be characterized by more non-state actors taking advantage of the vacuum. So expect AfriForum, Operation Dudula, and others to be more vocal. That will be our new environment. They can sense that power. There's a book by a South American, I forgot his name. The title is The End of Power. Power is fast fragmenting in South Africa. Non-state actors can perceive and sense that. So what will they do? They will become more forceful to try and protect their sectional interests. Keep that in mind. The last point on the short term, society will be on tenterhooks. We are not going to be confident as a society that we are moving in a specific direction. We'll always be anxious because no one really has power, and therefore we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. That's the short term. And that's the end of the bad news. Let me give you the good news. And that is rescuing our future. Let me remind you of something that you know. We have a beautiful country called South Africa. This country is, and I've been fortunate like you. I have traveled the world. I know what I'm talking about. This is one of the best countries in the world, without a doubt. Without a doubt. That's how I want to begin my Rescuing the Future project. First, if we are going to rescue the future, and I believe that this country can be rescued, and this country can be a Singapore of Africa. Without a doubt. The formula, I'm going to give you some of the elements now. One, we must all believe that infrastructure can be rebuilt. That's the first thing. So I know Johannesburg has been turned into a slum. Durban is a slum. Mangaung, Bloemfontein, I drove through there. It's a garbage heap. We must all believe infrastructure can be rebuilt. I mean, by the way, if you look at our infrastructure, it's not broken compared to Europe after the Second World War. It's not broken at all. Well, Europe was rebels all over Germany. But go to Berlin today, and I've been to Berlin, and look at it. So infrastructure can be rebuilt. That's the first thing. So if I wanted to sort out our public health, for example, I would go to Soweto. I wouldn't build a new hospital. I would simply go to Chris Hani Baragwanath and say to the deployed cadre who runs that in the name of a CEO, you are out. Number one, I appoint a proper manager and say, your job as the proper manager is to clean the hospital. Just to clean water, soap, and mop. Just clean the damn thing. The second thing is, you are a proper manager. Manage this thing well. It used to run well, and the hospital is still there, so you don't need a new hospital. So infrastructure can be rebuilt. The second thing is that we must prioritize political criminals at the top. We say they are a special project. You talk to the judiciary to say, set aside special capacity. These people, when we arrest them, they must be processed. There's rule of law. The constitution allows us. We can do that. They are, and at the top, former ministers, all of them, former presidents, we prioritize them, we lock them up, period. Once you lock them up, a clerk down there, if you lock up the former minister and the former president, will stop whatever they're doing, whatever nonsense. You will stop whatever nonsense. You could even send a message, by the way, to communities who are burning schools. If you burn a public property like a school, a clinic, it's 50 years in jail, you're not coming back. It's law, minimum sentencing. It sounds crazy, but you can pass a law in parliament that says you burn a school, You are angry about service delivery, but don't ban a school. You don't touch a school. You go 50 years in jail. The third is that the framework, philosophy, Helen, you need two things in South Africa. You need a competent state and a competitive private sector. The state must be competent, because if it is incompetent, the results are the collapse of public infrastructure that is generalized in South Africa. So you do need to have a competent state. The example of it, by the way, and I say this, people say, yeah, you like the DA. It is the DA government in the Western Cape. I mean, I travel across South Africa. I know I have been to Mangaung. I want to cry when I look at that city, because I know it before. So competent state, competitive private sector. The fourth, and I'm finishing now, left with 3 minutes. I'll finish in 2 minutes. We need a meritocratic political culture. You see, there's a guy called Penny Penny in parliament. The guy has not been to school, but he happens to be Shangaan, by the way, so he's from my group. The guy has never seen a classroom in his life. He is a member of parliament making laws for me. I have a master's degree. How could an idiot? I mean, let's be honest. I'm not aware of any country in the world that has turned itself from a backward country into a first world that is led by someone who has not been to school. How do you have someone in parliament who has not been to school? It doesn't matter, black and white. There must be no one who has not been to school in our parliament. This can be done. Kenya, by the way, an African country, has a law. Go check it out. You cannot be a mayor of a town. You cannot be a member of parliament. You cannot be a president of Kenya without a university degree. There has to be a baseline. There has to be a baseline. And for fifth, which is my second last point, you've got to address, you've got to give black people, and this is very important, the majority of black people in townships and rural areas, science and mathematics-oriented quality education. This is critical. You don't pull down quality in white schools. You don't. You don't pull down quality in white schools. They are a resource. You need to open up access there. The children of the black elites who live in the suburbs must go there, because if you want a future where the elite work together, both black and white, they must go to the same schools. They must go to the same schools so that they don't speak past each other and they don't hate each other and they understand each other. So quality education for the majority of black people. There's a guy called Panyaza in Gauteng fighting about this Bella, this Bella, that. He comes from Tembisa, his township, I know it. He hasn't fixed a single school in Tembisa. He's fighting about schools in the suburbs. He has completely forgotten where he comes from. He should be focusing on making sure that the school in Tembisa produces 98% in mathematics and science. That is where we need to focus on. The last point, and I'm left with a minute, and I'm closing my diary. We need to have a leadership project in South Africa that will get young whites who are bright, brightest among whites, and young blacks, the brightest among blacks, and preferably it should be non-political. I understand what Helen is doing. She must continue with that. But we do need a project, like a Plato project, the philosopher kings, where young whites and young blacks who are bright are initiated into this idea that they are the future leaders of this country. It doesn't matter where they will eventually go, business, politics, civil society, but we have to get the elite of tomorrow sorted out. Because let me tell you, I've studied a bit of world history. There is no country that has developed without three things: leadership, leadership, leadership. Thank you.
Yeah. Prince, fantastic. Coalition starts now. I suggested that to Helen. You've just spoken about coalitions. You studied a lot of coalitions. How is the world going to be different for us, we the people, in this new coalition era?
This is the time when we must keep players in the coalition politics accountable. So if you voted for the DA, keep your party accountable. The DA must account to you. If you have voted for the ANC, keep your party accountable. That's what we should do as citizens. But most importantly, at the local government elections, there are municipal elections next year, we must keep our councillors accountable and make sure that things don't collapse where we live. That's what I think we should do.
So the coalition will make that possible. Something that I loved, I mean, I really liked your book, and I was not joking when I said it's been beautifully written.
Thank you. But controversial book.
Well, it's controversial. We're not going to go there, because anyone who wants to know, was Prince paid, wasn't Prince paid, what's the story, just go and watch our podcast. But what I loved here was the history.
Yeah.
You went into the history and the history of South Africa that has not been told, has not been, it's not been absorbed into our national culture yet. Mm-hmm. History. Yeah. Going back many years ago, it was a groot trek.
Yeah.
And then it was the, I suppose, before then, it was the British were the good people. Yeah. Then the Boers were the good people. Now the Boers were the bad people, and who knows what the British are. Isn't there a case to be said for a South African history that really delves into the kind of issues that you covered here in the early part of your book?
A very important question, Alec. You see, one of the things that I've, and this is a personal project, people who read will notice you actually find very few books, especially on South African history or even world history, written by black people. It's a fact. You will struggle. The history I've written here, by the way, most of our historians, blacks, they actually are not even aware of it. So I've made it a personal project to study South African history in depth. If we had an hour, I would unpack the history of the Afrikaners. I've read all the Afrikaner historians, I've read them. Kiliomi, going backwards. But here's the thing. The interesting thing is this. And Churchill said, if you want to be a statesman, read history, read history. There are few things, or even none, by the way. There are few problems that we, the living, are battling with that the dead haven't confronted. That's the thing. And it's fascinating about human beings. We think that we are advanced compared to animals because we have consciousness and we can plan and imagine. But we keep repeating the same stuff. It's like this idea of a coalition, for example. Most people think that coalition politics in South Africa is new. I mean, it's only ignorant people who have no idea of South African history. The first coalition, by the way, was actually in 1910. That was a form of coalition between the English and the Afrikaners. It was a coalition. These were former warring parties. They came together. They co-governed the union buildings. That's why the union buildings has two wings, the West Wing and the East Wing. The second coalition, which was produced by an election, was actually in 1924. That is Herzog and Creswell. There was a coalition, and there were others. But here is the thing about it. What I've learned after reading South Africa's history is this. Is that South Africa is such a complex country. For it to work, the formula is not complicated. You need former enemies to work together and commit to it. This is the summary of the story. So going forward, any political party that thinks that it stands for white people only shall not succeed. Any political party that thinks that it stands for black people only shall not succeed. I know there are people, Afrikaners, who have been invited by Trump, and they think Malema is a problem. Malema will not govern South Africa. Historically, by the way, black people have never supported a party that said we are for blacks only. The Black Consciousness Movement, PAC before that, all of them never succeeded. So the only formula, this is what I've learned from history, is that both blacks and whites, difficult as it may be, must work together. That's the only way South Africa will succeed.
So the GNU, good project?
The JNU, by the way, it's a bridge because it's forcing us. It's very difficult. I can tell you, Helen is kicking and Balula is also kicking. They're all screaming. It's part of history. History is not easy. It's very difficult. But, you know, you need to be tenacious and committed to the project. So it is the JNU. It's a difficult process, but it's absolutely important. I would advise that the ANC, I'm not sure if the ANC will listen to me, must never walk out of this coalition. They must do their best never to walk out of this coalition. Same advice goes to the DA. However difficult it is, Helen, never walk out of this coalition. That's my advice. Because if we don't do that, we will send a message that white people and black people cannot do things together. And let me tell you, that would be an extremely dangerous message to send for our future.
Prince, you made a mention about 2027 and the coalition of Mashatile, Zuma, and Malema getting together at that point. Now, we've got the deputy president coming here on Thursday to talk to us at 10 o'clock. What is the question that he needs to answer relative to that? In other words, are we being just prepared for the spit?
Yeah, one of the things that pained me, by the way, and I'm going to say this, is going to stand where I stood. I don't care. One of the favors I've done for myself, by the way, is to be truly independent in the sense that I can generate my own income. So I don't give a damn about these chaps. I don't salute them. One of the things that saddened me, by the way, is when you have politicians who are corrupt, and we know they are corrupt, like Paul, and we still salute them. And we still salute them. We should be shaming such people. So you are asking me a question. What must we do with him? He's going to be here on Thursday. You must make this guy feel extremely uncomfortable. Yeah. So, if you ask me, if I was running the show, I would say to him, Mr. Deputy President, the whole world knows that your party is corrupt and incompetent. Why must we continue to have it as our government? He must answer that question. Here's the thing. When apartheid, when the National Party ran the show here, right? They were declared a crime against humanity, right? They were shamed by everyone. Why are we afraid to shame the ANC? The ANC is the biggest national liability to our country. Mandela, let me, in closing. Mandela said, if the ANC does to you what the National Party, the apartheid government did to you, you must do what you did to the apartheid government, to the ANC. So I'm very comfortable to be black and doing what I'm doing to the ANC, because the ANC is destroying the future of my children. And I don't want to, I have no alternative country.
You made a prediction that in 2029, the ANC will get below 30%. It's not the first time you've made that prediction. Earlier, in fact, I think towards the end of last month, the Social Research Foundation poll was putting the ANC at 32% already. Mm-hmm. That prediction of under 30%, might that prove to be conservative or optimistic?
Okay, that was not a first prediction. The first prediction I made 6 months before last year's elections. And people thought this chap is mad. When I make predictions, people think, I don't know why they suspect I'm mad. I thought I was educated. I said the ANC was going to get 38%. I said it was on Mike Shaw's State of the Nation. I said it. The ANC will get 38%. Everyone said this chap is crazy. What did the ANC get? 40%. I was not far off the mark. If you look at the social research prediction, it's actually not far from me. Because I'm saying it will cross the 30% downwards. Maybe it will end up sitting at 30% or 29%. But that's the ballpark. They will be below 35%. So what is likely to happen, depending on that rise, because my worry is the way the ANC, by the way, the new leadership of the ANC is going to rise. And that's Paul. And he will partner with Panyaza and other mad chaps in the ANC. It will be an anti-Ramaphosa and anti-GNU. And the whole thing would be, we are rebuilding the ANC. And their attitude would be, MK and the EFF, where ANC, we are bringing them back. That is my word. So that could actually reconstitute the ANC via the back door. And that, for me, would be very, very worrying. If you had a relatively okay leadership after Cyril Ramaphosa of the ANC, what you would have, you still have a GNU with the ANC below 50% and a DA under 25%. The DA will not break above 25% in the next election. And then they would be in the 50s. They would still form a government of coalition, which is a bit shakier. That would be like a frog. It would be taking us softly into the new politics. One thing for sure, we will not reverse our trajectory towards our new politics. South Africa has entered the new politics. The old politics of big liberation parties, it's over.
Prince, you did mention a little bit about what's happening on the global front, but only a little bit. There is a point of view that what is happening with AfriForum and others going to Washington, this is going to give the ANC a second wind. It's going to enable its old supporters to come back and say, we're not going to listen to this crazy guy, Trump, and actually we're going to give the ANC our votes next time round in 2027. What's your reading of that?
Yeah, I didn't touch on global politics because Helen has done a good job. I mean, there was no point in me sounding like a broken record. Of course, I don't agree with everything that she said. Just to give you an example, on Iran, my policy, if you ask me, fortunately, I don't have a political party, so I can represent my own jacket. My policy towards Iran would be, they are neither a friend nor an enemy, period. There are some countries far away in Asia, Middle East, they're causing trouble to those countries there. It's none of my business, especially if you are in a troubled world like we are in. This is when you're supposed to focus mainly domestically and consolidate national unity. That would be my approach. But let's park that. AfriForum. What AfriForum is doing, I don't agree with it. Place it on the table. You see, AfriForum is not different from the ANC because AfriForum goes to the US, to Trump. And Trump is a crazy chap. I mean, it's not a proper president who has thought through the implications of what he's doing for America and the Western project. He hasn't thought through that. He's a crazy chap. At the end of the day, he's shooting America in the foot. At the end of his project, America will not be a leader of anything. At the end of his project, will not lead the world. It won't lead the West. It will lead absolutely nothing. And by the way, the Americans are going to turn against Trump and Elon Musk. Mark my words, but let's park that. AfriForum, if it goes to America, the ANC has the right then to go to Iran. What's the difference? The one chooses to go to the White House. Let the ANC go to their friends as well. This is wrong. We should not be going outside to solve our problems. We've got brains inside here. We need to sit as South Africans, like we did, by the way, at CODESA, by the way. We didn't go to the US. We didn't go to Iran. We didn't go to Russia. We sat and sorted out our issues. So if you've got a different opinion, let's sit. I want to talk to you. So AfriForum should not go should never have gone there. The last point is, we all know, if we are rational, that what they are saying to the US is not correct. The Afrikaners in South Africa are not killed en masse. I'm not saying there are no farm murders. There are farm murders, just like there are murders in South Africa. I mean, black communities, by the way, are hell compared to what the Afrikaner farmers are living through. So they should never have gone there to do what they did. So I disagree with that, but I haven't answered your question. No. The black people are not going to vote for the ANC simply because of the noises that are coming from Lithuli House. Black people are not idiots. They can figure out what is going on. So the ANC will not reverse its fortune. its fortunes politically because of this noise about the AfriForum. It's neither here nor there. I mean, there's some black guy in a township somewhere in the rural area doesn't care about AfriForum. That's not, they don't even know where the headquarters of AfriForum are.
Herman Mashaba, he 4 years ago was our opening speaker. He was full of hope, full of excitement, full of potential. You've written this excellent book about the man. You probably know him better than anyone apart from Connie. What's your view on what he's been doing of late?
Yeah, look, I've spent many, many hours with the man. And the strange thing is this, people thought, and that's what they said, I mean, this, and I just don't care. They thought I was promoting Action SA. But here's the thing, when I approached Herman in 2018 to write this book, he was actually doing well in the DA. My thinking at the time was that Herman was going to go far in the DA. That was my thinking. And then I was thinking, because there's something I was seeing in the world, outsiders coming from outside, taking over the political arena, including Trump, by the way, this first, including Zelensky in Ukraine and others. Then I said, could it be that this is the guy eventually who's going to take over our political arena? And I thought he was going to take over the political arena through the DA. That was my thinking. That's how the project came about. Then I went to him. And the rest is history. Action SA was born much later. And my judgment, by the way, about Action SA, you have read the book, is that the player is still on the field. I cannot pass judgment because I don't know. And look at what has happened. So, to summarize, Herman has been, he's got lots of wounds. And his idea is that his wounds come from the DA. He has been betrayed by the DA. He has said it publicly himself. Right? And he explains how he was offended by the DA. The last offense was the moonshot pack. He negotiated with the DA and he says that he got the DA to agree that whatever happens, the DA wouldn't go into a coalition government with the ANC. And the DA did feel bitterly offended by it. And in my reading, and I've not been in contact, by the way, with him since the book, believe it or not, I've never been to his house, kept a distance. His thinking is that he will teach the DA a lesson. So he is, in my view, a bitter man against the DA. So the DA can explain itself, but that's what I think drives him.
Onto the questions from the delegates. Who do you think, from Kevin Wicht, will be the likely candidates to succeed Cyril?
Sure. Here's the thing. The ANC has run out of leaders. Period. The ANC has run out of, maybe there's an adjective that is missing. The ANC has run out of credible leaders. People who are left there are scoundrels with no integrity. Society, when we imagine them leading us, we are scared. But the front runner is actually Paul, the deputy president. And he wants to be president of the ANC and of the country as in yesterday. And I can tell you, he doesn't sleep. He's working on that project. Fikile also wants it, by the way. Fikile Mbalula wants it. And there could be others. So who is going to succeed? Currently, I have no idea, to be honest. But what I know is that the leader who's going to succeed will be he or she who's going to sing an anti-Cyril and anti-GNU slogan. That's the one who'll succeed. So if you use that as a measuring rod, you could possibly say Paul. And if I get it wrong, I am very glad to eat my own socks. I think they are very tasty.
But how can the GNU, what can the GNU do? Because it's not in the DA's interests for that scenario to come through. What could the members of the GNU do to avert that possibility?
And the responsibility is on the side of Cyril. But Cyril, I'll say it, I don't care, doesn't pay me, never pay me. He is one of the most incompetent presidents we have had after 1994. Zuma was the most corrupt president. But he was very competent in doing his corruption. He knew how to. He was very competent. He knew that, no. If you want to fire Praveen, fire him at night. But fire him. Cyril is extremely incompetent. It's like, just maybe to sidetrack, this budget thing. If you had a competent president, we should never be where we are. When you are leading a coalition government, you know that your comrades, your party is not in charge. You need to have the wisdom to withdraw a bit. Don't invest with your comrades. There are critical moments. Mandela did it, by the way, to his own. There were moments when Mandela prevailed on the ANC, including on the Springbok. He said, comrades, I mean, they were angry. They want this changed and the emblem. Mandela listened to them. And he came later. He said, comrades, do you want people to die over an emblem? He asked them. And they started scratching their heads. He prevailed. Said, this thing shall stay. So Cyril, the budget, if I were him, I would have consulted with the leadership of all the partners in the coalition and struck a compromise before the budget day. If the DA said they don't want this, we argue until we find a common solution. Don't leave it to the Minister of Finance. It was not a Minister of Finance business. That was a presidential business. He missed it. So that's the thing about Cyril. Extremely incompetent. I even forgot the question.
But the question was, what can the GNU do between now and 2027 to turn that around?
There are certain things. And I think they've missed the boat. I hope they can still do. One, fix Eskom. If you are to fix Eskom, and the South Africans, we now know that Eskom has been fixed and it was fixed by the GNU. Let me tell you, we would actually slant more towards the GNU than any other thing. That's number one. We would. So if the GNU can do certain things that will show us that our lives are improving, then it will be up to the parties in the GNU to go around trying to run away with the trophy and say, the DA will say, we did it. The ANC would also say, we did it. But at least fix the basics. One, Eskom. Two, Transnet. Let the goods be transported to the ports. Three, this water nonsense that we have in Johannesburg and in Gauteng. Fix it. Get it fixed. So fix the basics so that people feel that there's improvements in their lives. The basics are working. But the problem is that the basics, as we speak, are actually not being fixed. That's my sense, that the basics are not being fixed. At least there is not even a show of agreement collectively by the components of the GNU that they agree on fixing the basics.
What's going on in Gauteng?
Okay, simple. What's going on in Gauteng? It's exactly what is going on in Durban, in Bloemfontein. You know, if you want to evaluate governance, you know, Lee Kuan Yew, who is my intellectual role model, used to say he used a guest house to evaluate the governance of a country wherever he went. And he tells the story of his trip to Egypt. He went early on and the guest house was working and the curtains were new and everything, the toilets was flushing. Then he goes 15 years later. When he flushes the toilet, instead of the stuff going down, it comes up, and he said to himself, governance is broken in this country. And he was right, by the way. Here's my test. I use the central business district, the city center, as my, because when I travel all over the world, I want to go to the city center. In Paris, I want to go to the city center. In London, I want to go to, in Cairo, I want to go to the city center. Go to the city center of every city, every town that has been run by the ANC over the past 30 years. It's broken. It's a slum. I used to go to small street in Johannesburg that runs into Carlton Center. You don't want to go there today. You're going to be mugged. So, what is happening in Gauteng? It's a clear case of incompetence and corruption by the ANC. Full stop. There's nothing more to be added. And the whole province that was promising, my goodness, Gauteng, with money. I mean, Sandton is the richest square mile in Africa. But Sandton goes without water. Who does that? I mean, can you imagine you are in the richest square mile of a whole continent? You are without a basic thing as water. And my wife and I have an apartment in Sandton. I want to pull my non-existent hair when I'm in Sandhill. That's what has gone on in the housing, unfortunately. But it can be fixed. I can assure you it can be fixed.
Ryan's question is, how do we get the internet and education to the rural population so that they can be informed? No one who's informed and educated can vote for the ANC, EFF, or MK.
Forget about voting. Forget about voting. The thing here, we're not playing cheap politics. The business is not about cheap politics. It's about fixing South Africa. And this is the picture, if you ask me. I want the average South African to enjoy the living standard that is enjoyed by the average citizen of a first world country. That's the agenda. It's not about who votes for what. That's the agenda. If we can get the average South African, right, to live like the average citizen of Singapore, that would be the agenda. They will decide who to vote for. Remember, at that stage, they may not even be the ANC. So this question may not arise at that stage. And the business of fixing education is not something that you do overnight. If we do the things that I'm talking about, we are going to see the results in 20, 30 years. Because there is nothing you can do to rescue someone who's 30 years old who has not been to school. Let's be honest about it. There is absolutely nothing. You can give them they call them expanded public works program. But you have to make sure that the son and the daughter of that person goes to a well-functioning public school that produces good results in maths and science. And we, the taxpayers, must fund that public school. There's no country in the world that developed on the basis of a private school. Show me one. There isn't. So the business is not about who votes for what. The business is, what kind of citizens do we want to see in the next 20 years? And what do we do today? Don't worry about the ANC. The ANC will be dead. It will be no more. If you think I'm dreaming, go and find the equivalent of the ANC in Zambia today, the party of Kenneth Kaunda, and show me. You won't even find a T-shirt. Where is it? Completely disappeared.
What about BEE?
BEE. You see, Helen is right. And I saw Mweletsi somewhere. Mweletsi has written a good book on BEE. And I agree with both of them. Don't evaluate. You see, when I evaluate not on the basis of intentions, but on the basis of outcomes. What has it produced? So, I was a lecturer at the University of Pretoria. So, focus on what has it produced. 30 years later, this is what the BEE has done. It has made Cyril Ramaphosa a super billionaire. He's the second richest black man in South Africa. That was my, I think, you correct me, after his brother-in-law, Patrice Motse. Right? It has produced a small layer of black millionaires and billionaires connected to the ANC. That's number one. Number two, these people, if we were to go around and say, how many jobs have they created for black people, their own people? You will not find many. So the BEE thing has missed an opportunity. You see, the Afrikaners were poor at some point. I'm sure there are Afrikaners here. A poor white problem. They were very poor. How did they solve their poverty? They didn't solve it through an AEE, Africana Economic Empowerment Program, that you must get shares in every English company. No, they didn't get shares in every English company. The Afrikaners did a few things. One, they built good schools for their children. Public schools, they did. Two, they created parastatals that were used to train their people and provide employment to their people. Three, they created productive companies where they produced stuff and sold stuff. The BEE group did not do these three things. That's why I'm anti-BEE, because it's unproductive. If you ask me, I would have, the ANC has missed the boat over the past 30 years. If the ANC had focused on what Lee Kuan Yew did, train black people, give them top skills in order for them to be globally competitive, there would be no need for BEE. There would absolutely, here's the thing. I don't need a BEE myself, personally. Why? I am educated. I can think and ask myself, how do I feed my children? I don't need some BEE. Imagine if you produced a me in science, engineering, technology. The blacks would be doing stuff for themselves. So that for me would be the true liberation for black people. And here's the thing. If you develop black people, no one must entertain the idea that you are going to drag white people down. No. You develop black people, all of us, black people, white people must never be dragged down. All of us must enjoy the wealth of this country and enjoy a good standard of living. And then we are going to talk the same language and understand each other. And you know what? We can turn it into a bliss.
Well, we're coming to the end of our conversation, but there's a question that our next speaker, Neil De Beer, did suggest on Sunday, that Patrice Motsepe could be entering the union
politics.
Buildings.
Yeah.
Politics. You mentioned him earlier as the brother-in-law.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
It's going to confuse the DA, just like they were confused by Cyril Ramaphosa. The DA, at some point, they were on drugs about Cyril Ramaphosa.
How? In what way?
In the sense that they thought, let's support Ramaphosa because he's business-oriented and let's throw our support behind him because he's aligned to our agenda. They did support Cyril Ramaphosa. There is no question about Ellen is here. Even Motsepe is going to confuse the DA. And this thing about him entering politics, by the way, is real. I know something about it. And if you look at his conduct, he has been pumping a lot of money to churches. He has been pumping a lot of money and causing up with traditional leaders. He's been doing a lot of stuff in preparation of this presidential project. So it's real. But his mistake, and I whispered into the ear of someone close to him, I said, he must forget about the ANC. The ANC is a carcass. His mistake is that he wants to enter politics through the ANC and he believes that he can rescue the ANC. Terrible mistake. The ANC will drag him down. The ANC is not rescuable. It's a dead weight. If you think you can carry it, it's going to drag him down. So his impact will be to confuse the DA. But he's not going to rescue the ANC because the MK guys will not support him. And in fact, they will ratchet up their white monopoly capital sloganeering against him. So he's not going to shift anything politically very much. He thinks he can. Let him try. And you ask me when he has failed.
Let's close off with a question about BRICS from Don. Do you see the BRIC power bloc having greater role in global politics as the US and Euro countries grow apart?
This is what I see when I look at the world. Like it or not, China is a big force of the future. You deny that at your own peril. Look at all indicators, and I've read books. You can read the Kishore Mabuvane's book, Has China Won? This is the guy, by the way, who used to be an advisor to Lee Kuan Yew. Has China Won? And just go read that book. And even Kissinger on China, by the way, read that, you will understand. China is a force for the future. So whether we like it or not, we will have to do business with China. As a country, we will have to do business with China. So if I were to advise those who govern South Africa, under the current environment, I would tone down alignment. I'll tone down alignment with any big power. Let them fight. Let China fight with the US. Let Russia fight with the US. It's not my war. I mean, we are a small little thing on the southern tip of Africa. So I would tone down that. But I would maintain a line to Beijing. and I would maintain a line to the US. I would maintain a dotted line, very thin dotted line to Russia, so that I am aware of what is going on, but I'm not aligned. And that would give me bargaining power because each one of them would want me, but I'm very elusive and slipper. That's how I would play the game. In the meantime, I would be building up national capacity to be a Singapore in the next 20, 50 years. That's how I would play the strategic game. But we've got fellows who can't think. Do you remember a speech by Ramaphosa that lays out a clear strategy of where South Africa is going? The fellow's first trip, by the way, international trip, you may not remember. You know, he went to Angola, right? Angola. What was he doing there in Angola? First state president to make a statement to show where you are going with your foreign police. The chap has no clue of what is called foreign police. Unfortunately, I know he wears a suit like me and he has an accent better than me. There's no clue. Period.
Prince Mashele, the best dressed presenter today.
You can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here, and get to shop more here, and do more here, and enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies, and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Downings is South Africa's leading marquee infrastructure company, proudly celebrating 25 years of excellence, renowned for creativity, innovation, and unmatched technical expertise. Our event marquees and semi-permanent structures elevate any project with style and sophistication. Whether it's a corporate event or a commercial project, we tailor every structure to meet your needs with world-class precision. Visit downings.co.za to consult with our expert team. Downings, your trusted marquee specialists nationwide.